Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Hello. Just before we get on with today's episode, Chris and I want to tell you all about our Patreon page. It won't take long, but we think you're going to want to hear it.
Because you're missing out, quite frankly.
Massively.
All the more risque stuff that we sometimes think, oh, can we get away with that? We put it on our Patreon pages. And there's over 150 episodes for our $10 subscribers.
Absolutely. So for whatever that works out in UK pounds, what's that, about £7.50 a month?
Yeah, for the price of a bag of chips, for a Savoy and chips, you can actually have us in your ears four times extra a month.
That's four episodes minimum that we put out exclusively for Patreons. Plus, there's loads of... We video most of our episodes now, and the videos, you can watch all of the podcasts now over on Patreon as well. We put up loads of other unique content over there,
yeah, don't there's, we? There's pictures there. It's basically our version of our OnlyFans account, isn't it, basically? So you
exactly.
get the sort of pictures on there of the behind-the-scenes of Stu tucking into a pot noodle, basically. Sort of stuff that shouldn't be available to the public.
No one needs to see that. But that's all. We just thought we'd give you a quick heads up that if you're enjoying these podcasts, then be aware for like £7.50, you can go and listen to over 150 exclusive episodes. And there's some great ones over there with previous guests as well. Loads of names that you're going to recognise if you've been listening to the weekly podcast we put out.
And yeah, and also, if you are a subscriber, we're more than likely to do one of your top fives if you recommend it, because we prioritise the patrons first, don't we, as well?
Absolutely, yeah. So we try and sort of do as many top fives suggested by you lot as well. So, yeah, head over to Patreon. Where can they find out about it, Chris?
Patreon.com/hardcore listing. Easy peasy. And you can watch an intro video there as well of us in jacuzzis and doing sexy stuff.
With Gal Porter.
With Gal Porter. Not doing sexy stuff with Gal Porter. Can I just clear that up? Gal, not trying to drag your name through the mud.
And Scroobius Pip.
Yeah.
All right. patreon.com/hardcore listing.
Enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listing Podcast. It is the podcast where myself and Christopher Glasson.
Hello. Greetings.
Get a guest on and we ask the guest to pick a top five topic, and then within that topic they count down the definitive top five within it.
Yes,
Chris,
yes.
How are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks, mate. I guess we should thank our sponsors first and foremost.
Yes.
Charles and lovebeer.co.uk. They're still selling loads. He's still delivering beers to your doorstep. And there is a little promo code for that as well. Can you remember that, Stu? Can you remember the promo code?
I can't remember that. That's yours, mate. Go for it.
LBHCLP. So stick that in love-beer.co.uk and you can get 15% off of your alcohol. Yes, and also Luke from Bang Boom Creative, who we recently recorded with, and that just went out on Patreon, didn't it, as well?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what's up to Luke and the Bang Boom Creative crew? And a quick shout-out, of course, to our wonderful producer, 76.
Well done. Right, shall we steam straight in and introduce our guest?
Mate, after you. I'll let you do the honours.
Okay, joining us today, frontman of Creeper, is Will Gould. Hello.
Hello, everybody. How are we doing today?
All the better, mate, for seeing that wonderful mini rug that you just showed us.
Yeah, it's like a miniature woven rug. I thought that if it was large, it would probably cost a lot of money. I'm not sure how much a small woven rug like this would go for, really.
It's but you know, the big ones.
It's a lot of craftsmanship on a small rug like that.
Do you think a smaller rug was made by a smaller person?
I mean,
with smaller hands.
I imagine when it was made by the borrowers, you know, it feels like something that might fit to their house.
Definitely. Oh, that's a great shirt. Okay, Will, so the setup is, I'm sure you're aware that I know you're aware because you've chosen the top five. So I'm gonna ask you, what is your top five going to be today, Will?
Well, I've chosen Jim Steinman kind of B-sides and rarities. I've got some little known things to talk to you about. But this is just a nerdy thing that I've always been very, very invested in, the career of Jim Steinman. And if anyone listening doesn't know, hasn't not heard of Jim Steinman or unfamiliar, you will absolutely be familiar with his work because he's written some of the biggest songs of all time. Very famous for writing "Bat Out of Hell," the Meatloaf record, and there was all of this controversy at the time of how big Jim Steinman's name was on the cover because he wrote all those songs. But he's also written songs for Celine Dion, for Boyzone. His credits kind of span far and wide. So he's one of the greatest songwriters. Obviously, Bonnie Tyler, "Total Eclipse of the Heart." Basically, every song you've ever danced to at a wedding has been written by Jim Steinman.
If you've ever pumped your fist, it would have been to Steinman, right?
Exactly.
Those sort of power ballad nights. I've got a lot to thank Steinman for, basically.
100%.
They feature
it's very
quite
sort of epic sounding, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. I think that like a lot of the time, he based a lot of his style, production style, on Phil Spector. And obviously, Spector's known for excess and building the wall of sound. So Steinman was kind of doing a similar thing, just more and more and more and more. That you don't really get a very dialed down Steinman song across his work. It's always very flamboyant and over the top, and it's been a reference point for me in my work for years and years and years. But he had a fascinating career. It's a lot of really funny stories about Jim Steinman over the years.
Well, I guess we're going to touch on a few of those as this podcast unfolds. Before we get rolling on that, were there any other considerations for top fives when you got to before you chose Jim Steinman rarities?
So I was trying to think of things that that were particular to my niche interests, and it was really boring ones I came up with at first. I could just talk about David Bowie the entire time, but people people that know me with this that they've heard all that before, you know. So I think people would have done that, you know. So then I was like, well, I could talk to you about professional wrestling. I don't talk about that very often, but unfortunately, I'm a really nerdy black hole of professional wrestling knowledge. Completely useless, you know. Completely useless information. I've read so many books and things about professional wrestling. I think the spectacle of professional wrestling has always enticed me. The idea of this kind of heightened reality where the fact and fiction were blurred. So I really, really considered talking about that for a while, but I thought, like, rather than outing myself as a complete nerd for that, I'd focus on doing the same thing for music.
It's really weird because this is part of this. This podcast is part of Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network. Scroobius Pip is a huge wrestling fan, and within that network is Jim Smallman's podcast.
Yes,
and obviously we've had wrestlers on, haven't we? We've had Jimmy on.
Yeah. I know Jimmy very well. Yeah,
and so it's weird because it's where we draw the line because. Chris, you like your wrestling, don't you? You've been to lots of
Progress
events.
I'm a casual fan, Will. So, like, I go to Progress with Pip, love it, absolutely love it for all the things that you say. And then sort of like Pip gets a bit frustrated because by the time I go back next, I've forgotten everything that's happened. I'm like, who's that guy? But I love it. I think it's good. But I'm definitely a casual fan. I wouldn't make to be anything else.
Well, it's just, I find it so fascinating. I think, like, growing up, that was one of my favourite things. And I grew up, a lot of people kind of got into wrestling in the 80s with Hulk Hogan and, yeah. and Jake the Snake Roberts and you know, the Ultimate Warrior and all that stuff. But I was really a 90s kind of fan because of my age, I suppose. And I was obsessed with it because it was super, like, back then it was very, very violent. It was very violent programming on TV. It was really the sexual elements were all really heightened. And you look back now, it's kind of horrendous. Some of the things that were done. I just found it fascinating. I was like, how on earth? What is this? What is this? What's the mixture of reality and fiction? What I also found as I got older was the interesting kind of working in music and how wrestling is kind of similar to the music industry. The wrestling industry is very similar. Things kind of reflect the times. The reason it was so violent and kind of so controversial back in the 90s was because the 90s were a controversial and controversial time in general, you know. And quite, like, think about what was on television at the time, Jerry Springer and Howard Stern and Jackass and South Park and all of those things. It kind of fit into a place in that market. And as times have changed, wrestling has desperately tried to keep up with this kind of we're becoming a bit more woke, I suppose, and a bit more PC. But to do that, they've had to ignore the entire history of how the business came to be in the first place, which was built on a lot of kind of carnival culture. And it's a very, very interesting industry. The way it kind of revitalizes itself and tries to adapt. And the more you learn about it, the funnier this stuff is. It's like if you guys follow football or sport or anything like that, it's you kind of end up speaking a different language to people who also follow those things, you know? And so when something happens in the wrestling world now, even as I'm older now than younger kids who are getting into it, I just laugh to myself every time because you get to know these people over so many years, what Vince McMahon is doing, like some horrendous things recently. He's been put on shows in Saudi Arabia and, you know, like taking this money from there where they wouldn't let the women wrestle. And It's funny when you know his history because you're like, oh, it's awful. But like, once you know the character of this person and where he's come from, he's a promoter, like a diehard promoter. It's in his blood. The company belonged to his dad before it belonged to him, and all this stuff is just really, really interesting. And I think that's one of the things that's kept it so relevant to me as I've gotten older, because just watching the business evolve and change, and always reflecting popular culture, like when Sting came in WCW dressed in face paint. Yeah. It's just after The Crow came out, and so it was obviously the referencing what was going on television. The Undertaker is a collection of kind of horror tropes from throughout the years that's all in one character. I always find that very interesting. It's similar to a lot of the music I like, where you pick and choose from a lot of different styles and kind of merge them together into something new. That's kind of what the wrestling industry does as well with popular culture.
Sting painting his face white nearly pulled me full-time wrestling, because The Crow for me was like one of my favourite films, especially in the 90s, for all the things you were saying. And still got one of the best soundtracks, I think, of all time on a film. And
So
good, isn't it? And when Sting painted his face white, I was like, oh, hold on. maybe I'll spend more time on the wrestling and stuff like that. Yeah, it's cracking.
Me and Steve were talking about Marilyn Manson last time we spoke, and you think about that in the 90s as well. I just think it's just fascinating, that whole period of time. I always find that so interesting to look back on, because that was the world I grew up in. I didn't know anything before then. I was just like, oh, I guess entertainment and pop culture is just really, really violent and really, really controversial all the time.
Definitely.
You find like now we're back into like a time which is a lot healthier and a lot more aware. But like, it kind of apes a little bit what was happening before in the 80s with Hulk Hogan, where you had superheroes and supervillains. And it's cyclical, all this stuff, you come to realize. It's very interesting.
And I guess the tenuous link I'm going to throw now is, you know, that there's a theme of theatrics in everything we've just spoken about. And, you know, very much is that the case with Jim Steinman's productions? It's huge theatrical sounding, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I think that's what hooked me in. I have vivid memories of staying over my dad's girlfriend's house on a Tuesday. And after they'd all go to bed, I'd stay up and sneak a beer out of his fridge and then put his record, put his CDs in their kitchen on. And Bat Out of Hell is one of those records, isn't it? Like, it's like you've seen the cover. Anyone who hasn't heard the record, you probably have. It's kind of impossible not to at this point in history. But that cover is so alluring in itself. It looks like a comic book and it sounds like a comic book, you know? Mm. Like, I'm not going to mention Bat Out of Hell very much in what we're about to speak about. But like, it's obviously the his greatest work. It is the most concise eight songs that record is, and it's one of the best selling records of all time. Produced by Todd Rundgren, and they famously shopped it around to record producers and to record labels, but they couldn't record this sound because how do you record Bat Out of Hell on a budget for demos? You just couldn't do it back then. Now with modern technology, you can do a lot on Pro Tools. But back then, he would go into a room with Meat Loaf and he would be pounding the piano, just a piano and a vocal, and they'd play these Bat Out of Hell songs, which are so over the top and so insane, to a boardroom full of people who were trying to market disco music to people at the time. And Steinman would pound the piano so hard his fingers would bleed. And so you just imagine these people going, what is this? And obviously, it's kind of like was it the Beatles that had a similar story where no one wanted to take it, and then someone did, and obviously they became the biggest band of all time. Well, this became one of the top 10 selling records of all time. It's an amazing feat of musicianship. Also, the lead single, Bat Out of Hell, is it's like well over 5 minutes long. That song. It's not a radio friendly song.
You say that. Well, when I finished recording Off the Beaten Track with you last week. I recorded that afternoon with Frank Turner, and Frank chose for his first track the song with the greatest ever intro, Bat Out of Hell.
Oh, that's a great one.
Like, and he was like, what an intro that's got. He said, like, it's so long.
Down, down.
Brilliant. All right, so number five, what are you going for?
So I'm going to give you an easy one. This is not, we're not getting super niche here, but this is just something I wanted to talk to you about. I've chosen... a lot of people know that Jim Steinman has written and produced a lot of records that you wouldn't perhaps expect him to, but they become very obvious once you notice. So Floodland, Sisters of Mercy, This Corrosion is again the biggest Sisters of Mercy song, but that was produced by Jim Steinman in New York City. This is like 87 time, right after the time where the entire band quit and left Andrew Eldritch on his own. And he obviously found Patricia Vanian. And we spoke a little bit about Patricia in the past ourselves. She's become a friend of ours. And I'd say Floodland was always one of my favourite records growing up. An absolutely incredible record. But it took a lot of what the Sisters of Mercy were doing and just heightened it in this way that was like it crazy. Like almost completely reinvented the sound in some ways. And on This Corrosion, which is like the lead single with that, he has a 40-piece choir on that song. Like Jim Steinman was brought in to produce and co-write a few songs. I think Lucretia, My Reflection, and Dominion. And Dominion,
Dominion was a single as well.
Yeah, Dominion is like an amazing, ridiculous song. But those songs in particular, they stand out on those albums, and on that album, because of how absolutely ridiculously grand it is. He would record the choir upon the choir upon the choir upon the choir, which is classic Phil Spector territory there, you know, making people record on top of each other and on top of each other and on top of each other. And yeah, so he's brought in to do this thing after the success of Meat Loaf and to make this record. And but just the two of them were in the band then. So it's Andrew Eldritch and Patricia Morrison back then, who was in the Bags and in the Gun Club. And they looked like the perfect part. Since meeting Patricia, I've asked about this session with Steinman like a bunch of times about, because I'm just obviously fascinated as a big nerd. And so like it was so cool, because the few times I met I met those guys, like Patricia and that, I was just kind of starstruck. But after a while, as with anyone, you kind of you can just start you feel comfortable enough to start going, so what was making that album like? What was Jim Steinman like? And you start hearing all of these crazy stories. And she was like, she told me he had an assistant with him at all times. I had this assistant with him, and his job was to to kind of facilitate whatever Phil needed, and sorry, whatever Jim needed. And I've just tried to drop Phil Spector in again.
Freudian slip there.
Yeah, I know.
Because he's quite a wild guy.
And I think that the funny thing about Phil Spector is there was an interview I had with Jim where they were telling him, they'd asked Phil Spector what he thought of Jim Steinman's work. And Phil Spector, I think he slagged it off or something. And they told Jim about it. And in this interview, Jim, how does that make you feel? And he said, oh, it's like being slapped in the face by God. It's amazing. That I wouldn't expect anything more. And I thought, that's so sick. What an amazing way to come out
Phil
of that.
Phil Spector's never going to go, yeah, he's a really good producer. That's just not Phil Spector, is it?
I know. And that, at the same time, it's almost what Jim wanted him to say. but yes, yeah, so this song, so like Dominion, the video for that record, that song was recorded in Jordan. And Patricia was telling me, this is why I threw this one in here, because I knew some little pieces that I thought would be fun to share with you. They had to film, I don't know if you've seen that video, but Andrew is wearing an all-white suit, and they're marching around like in Jordan, that famous landmarks in Jordan. And I was like, how did you do that video? And she said to me, well, we had to record it in the winter because obviously it would be too impossibly hot to film a music video wearing an all-white suit like any other time. So they've gone out there and filmed this elaborate video, which you could never film now. They would never allow that sort of thing to be filmed now. And it's impossibly grandiose, completely complements the production on that. Again, this Corrosion video is just as outlandish. It's like kind of a Mad Max dystopian future where Andrew has a pole and they covered his whole body in Vaseline so the water would stick and stay because he's shirtless with a leather jacket on. And she was just saying, all I remember is it was just super cold and super wet all the time in this movie studio. I always find those things fascinating.
Yeah.
But like on the topic of Jim, like he was saying that he would, I don't know if I told you this before, but he would send his assistant out to get meals in. And all he'd ever pick, and a few different people say this as well, there's another famous story of him doing this in a nightclub while he was heckling a band. Jim would order in all the side dishes from a restaurant. He would never order a main. He'd order every single side. And then the whole studio would just be covered in side dishes everywhere, like fries and things everywhere. He'd just eat junk food. It'd just be all over the studio. And he'd eat a little bit. And then eat a little bit of one of them and then just do away with all of it. And I love that story so much because that's exactly what you imagine him to do. He wants excess. Yeah. He's a king of excess. He's got this really niche thing. He only likes sides and he's covered the entire place in side dishes like to excess and then done away with them immediately and moved on. Like, how incredible.
On fry, yeah.
I think, I mean, firstly, I did not know my knowledge of Jim Steinman probably goes as far as Meat Loaf and Bonnie Tyler and the Boy's Own track.
I didn't know that.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. But I had no idea that he'd produced this Corrosion or Dominion. And when I hear it now in my head, them huge like choirs, I just think, of course that's him. Like, it's just huge, and it's like, yeah, and weirdly, like, because so much music, especially in the 80s with that sort of production, like, you know, a lot of 80s production has dated quite poorly. That hasn't. That still sounds like, sonically still sounds huge, doesn't it?
Well, it's funny as well, because like obviously Andrew's like hates the term goth. Like he's always like, even though he's often described as the godfather of goth music, but he hates it. He thought it was like it didn't mean anything. And I've always had a lot of respect for Andrew Eldritch. I thought he was
wearing a white suit in a desert. He's two of the least goth things you could ever do, right?
I mean, it's true. But you look at this Corrosion video. How many goth videos were modeled on that? And like when, especially when him and Patricia were together, they were like this duo, this iconic duo. And as well as that, and the kind of the world that they're from, it was just so larger than life. And I remember watching that video and just being absolutely enamored with it back when I was a kid, and absolutely loved it. And even now, when I go, when I was in Los Angeles making this Creeper record, I used to go to this club called Bar Sinister, like a goth industrial like kind of club night. And that would get played every single night I went. It's still so vital in that community and still like the anthem that everyone dances to. Like young people are still meeting their girlfriends while they listen to Disco Evasion. And I think that says something, you know.
I mean, I just love the fact there's a goth bar called Bar City. Love that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's quite divisive among that community, like that place. But yeah, it's a really interesting spot. There's like a little BDSM club upstairs, and downstairs there's kind of dancers, and then there's an outdoor smoking area, which is my favorite smoking area I've ever been to. There's like a bar out there, and there's some nights there'll be like fetish things going on. Other nights there would be like a band playing, and it's just massive and really sprawling. And you can kind of get lost in this place. It's really, really cool. They had like a, when you walk in down in Bar Sinister, there's like a little alley where you get to down there. They had cellars, and this one man had been making glass sculptures with his own blood. And I'm thinking, this is wild. Wow. This is so cool. But yeah, this is what I mean. Like this record has inspired like this entire community, you know, like it's still like the anthem that everyone goes to. It's like those are the most obvious, most famous Sisters of Mercy songs, arguably. And he did one more record after this with them. You know that song More? Are you familiar with that one? Again, it's got all the Steinman, the Steinman hallmarks on it. It's so larger than life, and but just
did
an amazing
Temple
piece.
Temple of Love?
No, I don't think he did Temple of Love. Not to my knowledge, I've got a very rare pressing of Temple of Love. It was a gift for Christmas, actually, from one of my mum's friends that gave me their copy of Temple of Love. Very, very cool. But yeah, I was a massive fan. And you know what's funny? As you get older, because I've been a fan of the Sisters of Mercy before I knew Jim had done the records. And you get old and you realise, oh, all these pieces, of course Jim did it. Like you just said, Of course, Jim did this record. It ties in with all of my other favourite things. Of course, they're all working together.
Okay, number four, Will.
Okay, so I've got a list of them in front of me this time, and I've come very prepared. So I'm trying to build up to the best one. I think what I'm going to go for is a record called he made a record called Pandora's Box, and this record it was a concept record about Pandora's Box. And it was Jim putting together a girl band, basically. This is like an 89 sort of time. And I don't suspect you guys would have heard this, maybe. Have you heard of Pandora's Box before? Okay, so it's a ridiculous record. All the songs. The thing is, you'll know the songs from this record because it's all coming back to me, is on it. Obviously, that's what went on to be that massive Celine Dion classic, you know. And Meatloaf would try his own version on the latter, the last Bat Out of Hell record, Bat Out of Hell 3, which we don't talk about very much. So the songs from this record went on to be very successful, but this was a complete flop. Where was it a success? It was only successful in South Africa. South Africa, this record was really big. Snapped in South Africa. It was big in South Africa. Ellen Foley, who sung on, you know, Paradise by the Dashboard Light on Bat Out of Hell 1. She was the voice on the record. But another woman called Carla DeVito went on tour and sung it on stage each night. So all the videos, it's Carla doing it. But on the record, it's this woman called Ellen Foley. So Steinman brings back Ellen Foley for this Pandora's Box record. And makes it puts together this girl band essentially. It's this really larger than life. Again, it's got these monologues, which I absolutely love. You'll be familiar with, on a hot summer night, would you offer your throat to the wolf with the red roses? You know that one from, so on this one, he's got this one that it's called, I've been dreaming up a storm lately. And, he would reuse some of the lyrics for this. A lot of the stuff in his catalogue, he would completely take from and reuse again, or Meatloaf would buy off him years later when they fell out and do his own version of it. That was kind of a terrible version of one of these amazing songs. But again, grander, larger than life. A lot of the songs in this record would go on to be very, very successful with other artists. But the album's amazing. It's so good. It's it's just one of those records that no one ever heard. It's a ridiculous. No, again, the artwork for it is absolutely bonkers. But I think he was trying to. I feel like he was. It's kind of like one of those things where he made Meatloaf a star, undeniably. Meatloaf had a star quality of his own. You'd often think about the size, like they put down the size of Meatloaf, and like speaking to like kind of outsider kids who didn't quite fit the rock star stereotype. He was trying to do that again with this band, trying to make develop a group. And often they say about Jim Steinman, he writes all these really sexy songs, like these sexy larger than life love songs, but like. He's just not that guy. He's like writing, he's writing about a life he wished he lived. You know, like this kind of, you know, the world's falling apart, but we're in love, and all of that stuff going on. And that stuff's always really appealed to me. It's all through my work. But this record is no different to that. It's ridiculous. It's really, really larger than life. Really, really over the top. And yeah, I still listen to this record all the time. I think some of these versions are better than the ones that would go on to be successful.
So has he had a bit of a up and down relationship then with Meatloaf over the years?
Oh yeah, we're going to get into that. There's some really funny stuff there. So after there was the whole about how big his name wasn't on the record, and it's a real shame to me that he's not he's regarded in music world as like a like in the music industry as this incredible songwriter, but like the general public, like if you ask somebody who knew Meatloaf, like you ask my dad who Jim Steinman was, he wouldn't know, but no. He could sing you the whole Meatloaf records, yeah. You know? And it's
he's like back of house at a restaurant, isn't he? He's like, you just don't hear, you just see the people at the front, but he's the one sort of like doing the genius, as you say, on Bat Out of Hell. That was all him. And but like, well, how did he meet Meatloaf? Was it at college or?
Well, I can actually do a segue into my next one if you want, so we can get to it.
Let's do that.
Okay, so he met Meatloaf in New York City. I actually wrote the date down to 1973. So Jim worked in musicals. Surprise, surprise. He was writing musicals from a really young age. Just this prolific genius, you know. And often you find with those people that like. They can't, you know, they're kind of on the spectrum somewhere where they're just so, so good at something. But like, and that's kind of like a lot of what you hear about Jim is he's just like so zeroed in from a very young age. He was just so like feverishly good at like creating and crafting these worlds. But like a lot of his kind of people skills outside of that weren't always the best. I don't know, you know, I don't know the guy myself. I wouldn't want to judge, but he was doing this musical called More Than You Deserve. And Meatloaf came and tried out for More Than You Deserve. And so in walks, like he's trying out all these different kind of classically trained kind of theatre people. And then Meatloaf walks in, this big guy with long hair and his name, everyone had been calling him Meatloaf. And so immediately I drew attention to him. And he auditioned and he sung the title track of the musical, it's More Than You Deserve. And apparently it was like, it stopped the entire audition process. People were crying. It was like this emotional, the way he sung it. Like, so, you know, back in the day, his voice was absolutely outrageous. Such a brilliant voice. And so Jim was like, oh, you know what? Like, I think there's a rock singer in here. And so that's what kickstarted their relationship. That's how he put together the songs for Bat Out of Hell and started to shopping them around to the labels. But the fact that this song is a great song as well. It's a really, really cool song. So this segues into my next point, I guess, as well, about this track. After Bat Out of Hell, Jim Steinman and Meatloaf had a big fallout. Meat had lost his voice, but apparently he was doing a lot of drugs at the time as well, not really looking after himself very well. So what happened then was, he said, I can't do another record, and there's a really great VH1 documentary, you know, the Behind the Music series from back in the day. They used to do those. When Meat's talking about, like, he said to Steinman, I'm like a steam train. I'll just keep going. You put me a coal, but latch yourself on. And we're going to go to the top. But like, what another person in the documentary was saying was Meatloaf was giving like an opera singer's performance every night. But opera singers tend to take like, you know, like do two shows a week. Meat was doing seven a week, and so yeah, like during the course of that time, if you ever seen the old grey whistle test performance of Paradise by the Dashboard Light, it's absolutely amazing. It's incredible. And Jim Steinman's on the tour, he's playing piano in the background and singing all the backing parts, you know. But his voice is kind of raspy, and it's the beginning of the wear and tear of Meatloaf's voice. You can kind of hear it happening. So, he the second record he wasn't prepared to do at the time. And Jim kind of tried to work out something else, which we'll get to again a little later on. But Meatloaf went and did a record eventually in 81 called Dead Ringer, which you'll know from Dead Ringer for Love with Cher. And a lot of the songs were Steinman pieces. But again, it was during the period of time where they weren't touring together or anything like that. And this record didn't do particularly well. But he did the song that he sung in on the musical that created their relationship More Than You Deserve. Did a studio version, and it's amazing, guys. It's so good. I used to sing this song when I was warming up to go on stage every day. It's just really, really, really over the top and dramatic. And it's like, then I saw you making out with my best friend. It's all like really over the top and really silly. And they made this amazing music video, which is one of the funniest videos. Meatloaf's in all of his gear, you know. At the time, we had like the big flowy shirt, and he goes into a diner, like his girlfriend's the waitress there, and there's another man chatting to her, and he's singing at everybody, and it's just absolutely bonkers. The sort of thing you'd never make today. For one, I don't think the music industry would sign Meatloaf today still. But because it's so out there, you know, it was really out of the box then. People were taking risks with things back then a little bit. Even at that time, you know, when people were taking risks, these records, people weren't getting them at first. So it's an amazing song from the musical, More Than You Deserve. And the recorded version came out in 73, but the musical happened in 73. That's how they first met. That's how it went down. But later on, they would do Dead Ringer, the second Meatloaf record. And Steinman's songs are on there, but it wasn't the same. Didn't work out.
Do you think that...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The point where people stopped experimenting with over-the-top grand videos. Do you think, like, after November Rain, do you think everybody sort of sat down and went, where can we go from here? We can't follow that. That's got to be the end of it.
That video is bonkers, guys. That video is absolutely crazy.
I'll speak to you about it later because I've told the story on here before, but I interviewed the guy that made that video and I've got some really interesting stuff to tell you about it. So I'll tell you when
I'd love to know about that. We were watching that not so long ago. We actually watched a Journey video the other night. I can't remember the songs escape. I can't remember the song for the life of me, but like this so that escapes me. But the video is them all singing deadpan serious to the camera, but all gyrating at the camera at the same time. There's a girl walking down, there's a zoom in on her bum, and she's wearing like a latex skirt. And then they're all air drumming, but then their instruments pop. It's like, you just don't see these sorts of videos from that sort of time period.
But no one's sticking around. Everyone's being serious.
It's deadpan. Yeah. And that's what I love. I think that's what's so funny about this stuff. And I think, like, I think it's like tongue in cheek in this slight way too. But people taking it really, really seriously and following through with the vision, not laughing on camera, not like, you know, it's not a joke. But like now looking back on it, you're like, this is amazing, isn't it? This is so cool.
Brilliant. Number, what number are we on?
We're on three, I believe. Are we on three? Or was that two?
What have I done?
Because you said great into that one. That was quite quick. So we might be on three.
I think we're on three because I've done this. Then Sisters of Mercy, we did Pandora's Box. Yeah. And that now I've spoken to you about this record. It's a single, this one, but it's a More Than You Deserve. But yes, so I believe we're on three now. This should be the fourth one now, I think.
Yeah.
These two are really good. So it's 1998, and Tim Burton has made a film, the first Batman film with Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton. Like an amazing, probably my favorite Batman film. Not Batman Returns.
So good.
It's a beautiful like imagery. Obviously, this is when Burton was really, really on it. Really, really mm-hmm. good, making all those really amazing films for the CGI, you know. It's just amazing. Obviously, Steinman was completely infatuated with this movie, and tried to make a musical of the Tim Burton Batman film for the stage.
Didn't know this.
I know, and this is a really niche thing that you guys can all go and listen to because there are demos of all the songs online, and they are absolutely amazing. It's so bonkers. Batman the musical. Apparently,
no way.
Batman the musical. Yeah, all the costumes from we use all the same sort of costumes from the film. And there was a bit of Batman Returns in there as well. It was like they were trying to fuse these two together. This is the Burton franchise of Batman. And apparently, the way Jim says it is, Tim Burton. He went to Tim Burton with it, and he thought it was a great idea. So Jim started going away and writing all these songs for this musical. And then when he presented it to Burton, Burton denied ever having any knowledge of it and would never agree to it. So it's kind of this, there's this kind of, they can't really see eye to eye on this stuff. This song is absolutely amazing. This record, if you search it, you can find it on like an old GeoCities website, the Batman musical. It's still there now. You can listen to all the demos. And Jim Steinman sings almost all of them himself, which is a common thread with some of this stuff. For example, there's a great video of online of Jim teaching Bonnie Tyler how to sing Total Eclipse of the Heart. You know, he obviously writes these songs and he sings them all. So if you imagine all those Meatloaf records, originally they were all sung by Jim Steinman, and he's just put characters in place and people around him to build his stories and bring his characters to life, you know, playing off this vision he has. So anyway, he wrote this record.
I'm just picturing Tim Burton sitting there looking really fucking confused while there's this guy with his fingers bleeding playing the piano, surrounded by fucking sides everywhere. Got this idea, Batman the musical. Do you want any of these fries? I'm not going to eat them.
I bought 100 packets of fries and they're all here. So Burton completely denied it. It was a lot of the time that the cancellation of this musical from ever happening was often put down. Steinman had made a musical called Dance of the Vampires that had gone terribly, and so a lot of people put down the cancellation of this one to how poorly that one did. But the songs, I really, really, really implore you guys to go and listen to these songs. The little demos, actually, like Roy Dodd, who was one of the backing singers on Bat of Hell, sings some of these songs. But like the ones that with Steinman are singing are my favorites. There was one called We're Still the Children We Were Then. And it's Catwoman and Batman singing to each other. And it goes, we were the children, we're still the children we were then. Still trying to get home. And it's like ridiculous because you imagine in your head what I've just sung to you. but with Batman in a full latex Batman suit and Catwoman singing to each other. And there's a song about Batman not allowed to fall in love because he's got to be Batman, you know, like he can't fall in love. He's got time to fall in love. And I'll sing a bit. That one goes, I'm not allowed to love, not allowed to fall. It's like ridiculous. It's like crazy. You couldn't put the sounds together because on paper you're like, Bat of Hell, Batman. If you squint your eyes a little bit, you can kind of see that. Yeah. But when you hear it, it is absolutely bonkers. There's songs that are supposed to be sung by like police chiefs on there. In the Land of the Pig, The Butcher is King is a song from it, which, again, in very classic, the story of Steinman, very classic thing that frequently happens. Meatloaf bought that song off him and then recorded a version of that on Battle of Hell 3. So you can hear in the Land of the Pig, The Butcher is King. In the Land of the Pig, The Butcher is King on a later record. So a lot of this was kind of harvested for its good parts. You know, Holding On for a Hero, for example, you familiar with that song? Another Steinman song. The intro for that, he cribbed from another one of his songs. Like he's kind of constantly like producing material and taking the best bits out when he needs it. But this musical, you've got to go find it. You've got to go listen to it.
Well, I've got to say, with Pandora's Box and this, that's why I love these top fives. Because my knowledge of Jim's not that deep, you know, it extends not that, you know, where shoes is probably a little less reaching than that. And then you throw out these and that's my afternoon now.
I really hope you do. I think you'll have such a nice time doing it. It's just bonkers. Like the crazy world of Steinman. I used to think about that. That story about him. I used to read interviews with him. I always wanted Steinman merch and T-shirts and things because I was like, I love these records so much. You could never find them. So I go on these little hunts, but you'd always find these really old magazine clippings with weird interviews. And this is why I believed Patricia when she was telling me about the sites in New York City when she was making the Sisters of Mercy record. Because there's this article where this interviewer has gone to meet him to have this interview. And he's in a bar. And he's got sides all around him and like a Coke with a big curly straw on it. And a band's playing. He's just like heckling the band as he's doing this interview and, you know, nibbling on sides. And it's what an amazing man. Like these people, they don't come around all so often. Little crazy geniuses. And I absolutely love it. It's the best.
Just loving the thought he's just heckling some band thinking, Batman music. That could be a goer.
There's not enough latex on that stage. But like you say, he's a genius. He, like, in terms of script writing, like he was writing plays. One got commissioned when he was still at college. I don't know if that was the same one that he auditioned.
That's very, very true. This is it. Like he's been prolific his entire career, you know. I was trying to meet him for ages. This is one of my dreams, was to meet him. He's one of my heroes. And so I was trying to reach out because I wanted one of those monologues, basically, for the Creeper record. I really wanted, for the first Creeper album, you know, where he's just shouting and doing poetry and just shouting and building up and building down and just loved it. But like, he's so hard to get hold of. We got hold of his agent in the end. But I just wanted to be like, I was like, just tell him, like, I'm a younger guy in this band, and I'm absolutely infatuated with his music. I'd love just to meet up with him, and if you'd be interested in doing something together, I was like, anything he wants to do, I'm just there, not for. But he's just so hard to get hold of. He's a little bit older now. The most recent thing he did was Battle of Hell the Musical. It's like, of course, that was going to happen at some point. But that's always been his dream for that, I think. And I did it in London, the premiere in London. I think he came to that. But he's in a wheelchair now. But he still dresses absolutely amazing. There's some photos of him online where he won some award and he was wearing a pair of glasses, like sunglasses, that were like basically made of mirrors. That like they look like something from Star Trek, you know, like one of the Borgs would wear or something. I don't know if the Borgs ever wore sunglasses. He's got like a glove on that's got loads of little buttons and things on it, and he just looks amazing. He's still true to form.
Was he one of those little Nintendo gloves from the 90s?
Do you remember those?
I just pictured a guy at the premiere, like from Deliveroo, just with a big box of stuff, just looking for the guy with the mirror sunglasses and the robot hand.
I'll come out front.
All right, so top spot, is it?
Top spot. It has to be this. It has to be this one. This is one of my favorite records of all time. So, after Meatloaf goes and makes Dead Ringer, Steinman is involved in it tentatively, but they've had a bit of a very poor relationship at this time. He doesn't tour. The second follow-up to the Meatloaf record that Steinman had written was a record called Bad for Good. Meatloaf couldn't do it, obviously, because his voice had gone out. This came out in 1981, and Steinman just decided, how about after all the problems with the last one, with like who the credits and everything, how about I just sing my songs? So Steinman made a solo album called Bad for Good in 1981. He got a lot of the people that were involved in Bat Out of Hell to be involved in this as well. And it is absolutely amazing. It's like one of my all-time favorite records. The cover of it has like an angel with a guitar holding a girl, and it's all painted by the same guy who did the first Meatloaf record. It's larger than life. It's extremely flamboyant. He actually had a top 10 record with this, which is crazy because no one's ever heard it. You never meet anyone who's heard it. When I go on tour, I always like to pull it out at some point with the other bands. Like there's this band, Ryan, who plays in the band State Champs. I was on tour with him. And he was like, have you got anything I've been listening to in the van? I was like, I've got an album for you. Do you like Meatloaf? And he was like, yeah, like enough. And I was like, go on Spotify and listen to Jim Steinman's solo record, Bad for Good. And he'd never heard of it before. And the next day, his entire band came up to me and were like, this record's amazing. Oh, my God. Like, losing their mind about it. Because I know when people hear it for the first time, because what's cool about it is there's like a weird... It's really over the top. It's all the production elements you're familiar with Bat Out of Hell, but with Steinman singing. And he's a competent singer, but he's not Meatloaf. So his voice kind of rasps and breaks, and he's like, like all through it. There's a weird punk rock energy to his performances on this thing. Like Rory Dodd, who was sung backups on Bat Out of Hell, sings a couple of songs as the lead vocal, like the more falsetto ones. Like there's a song on it called Surf's Up. And, a lot of Steinman's stuff is...
Is that a cover? Is that a Beach Boys cover?
No. You think that, and I think the first time I got it, I assumed as much. This one is absolutely not a Beach Boys cover because it's got the line in it that Steinman wrote, which is like he's always singing about sex, Steinman. And when you see pictures of him, you can't imagine him writing these lyrics. So like the tail, like the tag of that chorus is "Surf's up and so am I," which is just about a boner. Like it's like he's mentioned it in interviews. He's like written these songs about sex, like these beautiful ballads, just about you know. Ridiculous, like it's kind of like Roy Orbison in a way. You know, I drove all night and crept into your room to make love to you. But at that point, when Roy's making that record, he's like an older man. You know, it's a
yeah.
So anyway, this is all about Peter Pan as well, which is where I drew a lot of inspiration from this album when we were doing our album Maternity in Your Arms. We based a lot of our narrative around Peter Pan, but like renamed the characters and based it in a different world. But he's always been obsessed with Peter Pan. And a lot of people are. Michael Jackson was very obsessed with Peter Pan, as you remember. So there's like a song called Lost Boys and Golden Girls. It's this beautiful, outrageous song. But this is like a really X-rated version of Peter Pan. There's a lyric on the first song. You've been living your life like a girl in a cage, and you whisper when I want you to shout. It's like ridiculous. And it's Steinman singing it. So you've got the most authentic from his brain to your ears you've ever had. It's the artist's voice who's written this crazy, beautiful nonsense in your ears, singing it to you. It's incredible. There's a great anecdote about one of the studio engineers. There's a song on this, which is quite famous among like kind of nerdy Steinman people, called Left in the Dark. And it is just, it goes on far too long. It's such a long, long, excessive song. And it is amazing. But the studio engineer tried to slit his wrists when he was making this record with him. Wow. Because of how incredibly arduous it was. And Meatloaf predicted this was going to happen if he ever tried to do this song years ago. He was like, someone's going to try and kill themselves if you do this song, because the millions of takes he was doing, the content of the song, it's just ridiculously long. There's a bit where Steinman is whispering. It breaks down. It goes massive, 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 and then tight and small. And he's going, I just need some love, so turn on the light and I'll be left in the dark again. It's like ridiculous. Like, it's so, so over the top, and it builds and swells and crashes, and it's just an amazing piece. But he threw this record out. He then started trying to do a circuit like you would do with a Meatloaf record, and he went out and did TV slots. All the videos are very homoerotic, and there are dancers, dancers playing the Lost Boys with guitars, throwing guitars to each other, coming into a girl's bedroom at nighttime, and basically performing Swan Lake over the bed and jumping all around. It's crazy. It's absolutely mad. And then he did that on television with two dancers, a live performance. Jim is wearing leather gloves, which I absolutely love. I bought a pair not so long ago, complete homage to Jim Steinman and his leather gloves. He's wearing a leather jacket.
Great name for an album.
What, leather gloves?
Jim Steinman and his leather gloves. That should be the backing band.
That should be his backing band. Imagine being one of the leather gloves as well. That'd be funny.
I'm baby small.
he does this video. There's a video on YouTube you can see of him performing, and he's standing there with a mic on a stand, sung like aviators on, and long flowing kind of wispy hair that goes down to about here, and he is singing as these two dancers in like leotards dance and gyrate across each other. And it's like, what I love about all of this in general is it's theater people who love rock and roll trying to interpret rock and roll. It's like, oh, we can play rock and roll, yeah, sure, but obviously all of the things you can take the theater kid out of the theater, but you can't take the theater out of the kid. They're all just so insane, you know. Like it's like when Phil Spector tried to record the Ramones, you know, like two worlds is colliding. But this is, yeah, that's basically what Jim Steinman is, you know. It's amazing. And finally, on this point, there's a song called this, called and I say it in an English accent. It doesn't rhyme. It's supposed to say, I'll say it in American one. It's a song called Dance in My Pants, or Dance in My Pants, you know. And it is amazing. It is Carla from who performed live on the Meatloaf tour, but didn't record the vocals on the song. She now has got a big break on Jim Steinman's solo record, doing a duet with Jim Steinman, and they made a video for this song. It's basically like a Paradise But a Dashboard Light kind of part two, really, a redux of that. And it is an incredible song. But the video is bonkers. Jim Steinman walks into a peep show. And as he gets inside the peep show, he has a really weird interaction with a lady on the door. I think he's dressed as a cowboy as well. He's dressed as a cowboy. And he goes into this peep show and pays in. He goes in, and as the screen, you know, like in Amsterdam, those peep shows you have where it's like in a big circle, and it's like kind of like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I bet you've never done any of that before. Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like those big kind of, like a very strange kind of peep show. And as the mirror goes clear, it's Carla in the middle, and dressed as like, I don't know, a shepherd. and they begin singing this song. And it becomes like a part where they're all dancing, and there's this amazing part where Steinman comes in, where Steinman's at the edge of a bar. It feels like almost like Lynchian. He's at the edge of a bar, and someone is throwing him drinks, and he's singing the line, "I'm a lover, not a dancer." Like he's going, "I'm a lover, not a dancer." And as they throw him drinks, he catches the drink like in a bar, and like a weird sound effects play there every time, like something from like an old B movie, that sort of thing, as he catches it and he goes to drink it and he throws it on the floor. They throw him another one, he goes to drink it, he throws it on the floor over and over again while he sings this line.
Does he ever eat or drink?
Fuck knows. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a portion of, like, I don't know, fried pickles. You might have one. He's captain and he's singing the line. Don't want to be on my feet when I can be in the sack. Like, he's singing all this stuff to the camera. Don't want to be on my feet when I can be in the sack. I'm a lover, not a dancer. Anyway, doing this whole thing. And it is just crazy. By the end of it, that's like a whirlwind and then starts dancing over everybody. The lyric is, I don't want to ever be rescued. I don't want to ever be saved. I've got a feeling like I'm going to be like this forever, dancing on the edge of my grave. And it's just bonkers. It's crazy. The whole thing is mad. The very title of the record is from a song inside of it. And it's one of my favorite lyrics of all time. And I know that I'm going to be like this forever. I'm never going to be what I should. You think that I'll be bad for just a little while, but I know that I'll be bad for good. And they called the record Bad for Good. Brilliant. They pulled that the end of that and put it on the album. I just love that. I think it's so good. So yeah, there you go.
Oh, that's an incredible top five, Will.
I feel like I've spoken a lot then, but...
There's different routes people go with their top fives, and it's so incredible when someone really, really is that passionate, and the fact that you've actually gone in and you're reciting the lyrics to us and singing them, that's made my afternoon, mate. So, yeah, do not worry about it. If we're talking a lot... because we normally do, don't we, Stu? The fact that we're just sat here listening is a good thing.
So, Will, new Creeper record, right?
Yes, new Creeper album, July 31st. It's finally released into the world. It's been the bane of my existence for about 2 years. It's finally done.
And you've got music videos to come with this as well. Well, they're out, aren't they? They're all available. And do you ever take much of Jim's ethics into those as well, Will?
I think we almost constantly think about Jim Steinman when we're almost doing anything. Like the music videos are always really, really over the top, and as much as we can get away with the 2020 budgets as in comparison to 1981. We have so much fun with it. It's always very larger than life with Creeper. A lot of the monologues I was telling you about earlier on feature throughout this record. I heard that story from Patricia. Like, she was in a recording with us and did some spoken word things with me. And we're doing like a Jim Steinman sort of back and forth pieces, passages for the record. And that's been such a delight for me, and really, you know, serves a lot of my favorite things in one go. And the music videos are again, big flamboyant affairs as much as we can make them. There's one final one to come in the next 2 weeks, which is very exciting about it being released. It comes out July 31st. I think we just announced a show this morning. We're going to do we put a show in Kingston for the end of the year, along with songs like Banquet Records. It goes on sale soon. I don't know by the time this comes out. I don't know if it might already be on sale.
This will be coming out a few days after... Your new video drops, I think. So we will add the links to, obviously, your site and your socials, and a link to where people can go and check out the album, buy tickets for the show, and watch your vid.
Amazing! Thank you so much, guys. I've really enjoyed this. It was so funny. Before I came in down to do this, I said to my guitar tech, I said, I'm gonna go and chat about five things, my favorite things, and I said, I can recite enough stuff. And he just turned to me and went, you never shut up, you'll be fine. so there you go.
Wonderful. Will, thanks so much, mate.
Real pleasure.
Been great.
Guys, thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure too.
Wonderful. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com. It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.